So let's start with some parsha. As is our now we can start. Now we can start.
There's more.
Okay. All right. So let's begin. As Klal Yisrael goes to collect money and all sorts of valuables from Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's in Ohev Mitzvos, collects the Atzmos Yosef. And that was done because he had to do that, because he had to fulfill the promise that Yosef made his brothers take to him, that they were going to take his bones out of Mitzrayim. He was going to have Kavur in Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't going to be in Mitzrayim. So the question is, like, why is that such an important thing? You know, there's a major discussion in Poskim today whether it's worth it, meaning should people be paying tens of thousands of dollars in order to be buried in Eretz Yisrael when they lived their whole lives in America and they died in America. They lived and died in America, maybe spent a yontif or two in Eretz Yisrael. So is it really so worth it? Is it so worth it that we should? And it's a good question, Lalacha. There are a number of gedolim who I'm sure had many talmidim that would have been happy to buy them plots in Eretz Yisrael that chose to be buried in Chutz Laaretz. You can go to a tour of Kivrei Tzadikim in Queens, if you want. I led one last year. There are unbelievable Kivrei Tzadikim, like right, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. Yeah, everyone knows the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but it's not only the Lubavitcher Rebbe. There are many Kivrei Tzadikim, the Meitzchit Eloi, and the Chavetz Chaim Rashi Yeshiva, and many Kivrei Tzadikim in America. So what was it that Yosef needed to be taken out of Mitzrayim, that he could not be in Mitzrayim? Yaakov did the same, but by Yaakov was a different concern. By Yaakov, the concern was that they would turn him into a god. By the time Yosef's remains were taken out of Mitzrayim, there was no such concern anymore, you would think. So what was like the point of emphasis over there? Furthermore, the Medrash tells us that Kriyas Yamsuf only happened because of it. Meaning, because they happened to have been carrying Yosef's bones, that's what led to Kriyas Yamsuf. Hayom Ra'a Vayanos. So that was in the schus of the, says the Medrash, Vayanos Vayetzeh Chutza, that Yosef was Vayanos. Yosef ran away from Eshes Potiphar. So Hayom Ra'a, the Yam saw the Atzmos Yosef, and it fled in from the Jewish people. So Klal Yisrael was able to walk through the Yamsuf. Yosef the Vayanos Yosef. That Yosef did when he was confronted by Potiphar led to that great miracle. But what does one have to do with the other? I mean, other than the coincidence of the same word being used. I mean, it's even funny that the same word would be used, right? Meaning, does a sea really run away? Is that the word that you would normally use to describe the reaction of the Yam? So what is the zechus? I mean, obviously the Torah is trying to draw your attention to that, but why? What does the zechus of escaping Eshes Potiphar have to do with the splitting of the sea? Where exactly is the Mita Keneged Mita? And a third question. Yosef's act of resistance from Eshes Potiphar is described in detail in the Gemara Sota Daf Lamed Vav Beis. Gemara tells us Ve'yavo Abaisa La'asos Melachto, that Yosef came that day to do his melacha. What does it mean to do his melacha? Rabbi Shmuel Chada Amar La'asos Melachto Mamish. One of them says that he went, he came, he showed up to work that day. And the other one said, no, he came with the intention that Eshes Potiphar is there, and that she's an attractive woman, and that she was interested in him. The Gemara says there was no one from the Anshei Habayis present. The Gemara says, Efshar Bayis Gadol Kabeso Shalosa Rosh Aloi Bo Ish. Such an important person, had such a major household that he was running, and nobody was there? There was no staff in the house? Why would that be? So Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, Osa Hayom Yom Chagam Haya. It was a holiday for them. V'holchu Kulam the Beis Avodos Chavim Shalem. And they all went to their Beis Avodos Chavim. V'hi Amra Lehen Cholehi. And she said that she was a Chole, that she couldn't go to Shul that day, Lahavdil. Amra Ein Li Yom Shenizkak Li Yosef K'yom Hazeh. And it was all a plot. She was planning how she's going to be able to seduce Yosef, and she gets rid of everybody. If everybody's out and it's only her and Yosef, meaning she was familiar with the Yisra Yichud, or at least the logic of the Yisra Yichud, that if you create a Yichud situation, it will be irresistible, it will be something that will be very hard to overcome. She grabbed him. And at that moment, the image of his father came in the chalon, Amr lo, Yosef, asidin achecha sheyichtavu alav ne'efod, va'ata b'neihem, ritzon chashiyim chashimcha b'neihem, and his father said to him, your brother's names are all going to be on the avnei ephod. Do you want your name to be erased, or do you want to be present together with the destiny of all of your brothers that are part of the avnei ephod? Right, that part of the Gemara is pretty famous, I think, right? The image of Yaakov in the chalon, in a window or a mirror, whatever it was, that spoke to him. Okay, maybe not everyone realizes Yaakov's argument was about the avnei ephod, but that's also a pretty famous part of the Gemara. What happens next? Who remembers? What happens next in the Gemara? So what does Yosef do? So he sees the image of his father. So the way we often think of it is, he says, thank you, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Thank you so much. I appreciate you bringing me back to myself. Or he just runs out of the house, you know, and with the beged in her hand. Okay, right. What does Gemara say? Na'atz yadav bekarka. He dug his hands into the ground. V'yatza shichva zaro mibein tziporne yadav. And Shichva Zera, his semen, came out of his fingernails. Huh? There's imagery and there's imagery. What's the message of that? The Nazi part of Bekarka, the Shichva Zera came out from his fingernails? How does that fit the whole story? As impressive as that description is, the imagery of Shichva Zera coming out from Yosef's fingernails needs some explanation. I'm not a doctor, but I can't imagine that there's a medical explanation for that. You know, that a person overcomes a major taifa and all of a sudden, any pre-med students, all of a sudden the Shichva Zera just starts shooting out from his fingernails. What's that all about? So I think there's one basic yesod over here that helps us understand everything. And it's a yesod that's so fundamental to Yiddishkeit that it doesn't even register as a chiddush of any sort. It's just like a fundamental yesod. And that is that what Yosef was experiencing at the moment of Eishes Potiphar's challenge was what every Jew in Gullus has experienced ever since that time. And that is, we all experience a certain desire to fit in and to somehow associate our lives, our lot in lives, our destiny in life, to that of the destiny of our host nation, rather than with the destiny of the Jewish people. That there's this tremendous taiva to be an American and to think of ourselves as living the American dream rather than living the Jewish dream, or having in mind what Jewish destiny is supposed to look like. Rashi in Parshas Vayechi quotes from a medrash that Yaakov had many reasons to want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And when came his turn, Yosef swears, Anochi Esa Kedvarecha. And the medrash says that Yosef tells the brothers a similar tzivui, because he died before all of his brothers died. You know, politics kills you. So he died earlier than his brothers. And before he died, just like Yaakov, Yosef asks to be carried to Eretz Yisrael. And this was Yosef's way to demonstrate that he knows that we don't belong in Chutz Laretz, and that the goal is always to get back to Eretz Yisrael. No matter what you've done and what you've accomplished and how important you are in Chutz Laretz, the goal is always to get back to Eretz Yisrael. Sefer Chassidim says that you're not supposed to build a brick house in Chutz Laretz, because the same idea, there shouldn't be a sense of permanence in Chutz Laretz. We came to Mitzrayim only to visit, not l'shtakeh, no matter how long we happen to have been there. It could be centuries that you're there, but your visitors the entire time. Rashi in Vayechi quotes the Medrash that Lama Parsha Zustuma from Mitin Vayigish Vayechi Sheniftar Yaakov Kivan Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu Nistimu Einayim Shal Yisrael Mitzaras Hashibud. That when Yaakov Avinu died, so our eyes were closed, Mitzaras Hashibud. It's an interesting lashon. Our eyes were closed. It means we didn't see a tzara in the Shibud when Yaakov Avinu died. You know, as long as Yaakov Avinu was alive, and he didn't speak like the Goyim, and he didn't dress like the Goyim, and he had different dreams and different aspirations, and he was coming from a different place, and he wasn't a native to Mitzrayim, there was no Tzaras HaShibud. There was no doubt that we were different than the host nation. But after Yaakov Avinu dies, Hashem had to make a Shibud to remind us that we don't belong. Because one way or the other, we're going to be reminded. And that's the challenge of a Jew in Gullus, to live in Gullus, to thrive in Gullus, but to truly value and yearn for something much greater than the Gullus. In a certain sense, that's the challenge of a Jew who encounters culture and wisdom outside of Torah. You know, it's something that we all experience as Jews living in a modern world where, you know, all of you are very well educated and you experience wisdom, you see chachma, and to use it and to even excel in it, but at the same time to remember that Torah is what we cherish most. You know, I was, as you all know, I was in Eretz Yisrael several times recently. The second of my three recent trips to Eretz Yisrael was with a group of Rabbanim. And we went to visit different rabbis. So last time we did the trip, or maybe two times ago, I don't remember, we went to visit Rav Beryl Wein. Thought he would have tremendous perspective, someone who spent decades as a Rav in America, or a Sheshiva in America, then decades more as a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, a Mechaber Svarim. You know, you don't need me to give you Rabbi Wein's resume. You know, he's an accomplished rabbi. So we sat with him, and he was regaling us with stories and wisdom and witticisms. You know, it was amazing. And then he told us of a particular encounter he had with Rav Soloveitchik once. He was not his Rebbe. Rav Soloveitchik was not his Rebbe. But he said Rav Soloveitchik always gave him a lot of time, and he's always very kind to him. He's always very supportive of him. And he said that he felt almost because Rav Soloveitchik was not his Rebbe, that Rav Soloveitchik like opened up a little more to him, like let him. He felt that. I don't know if that was true or not, but that's how Rabbi Wein felt. That Rav Soloveitchik sort of let his guard down because it wasn't like the Rebbe Talmud kind of relationship. But Rabbi Wein was running the Kashrus Commission of the OU, I think, at the time. So he was, you know, Rav Soloveitchik was the posik, so he had to have what to do. Meaning, it was obvious that he was going to have what to do with him. So he said, I used to visit him in his apartment, and he says, because I wasn't a Talmud, I always felt that he was more open with me. In the non-Jewish world, he was famous for being an expert in neo-Kantian philosophy. He was sitting in his apartment with two professors from Columbia, talking and learning, so to speak, about Kant. And he says, Rabbi Wein said, I'm sitting there, I'm waiting, I have no clue what they're talking about. And after they leave, he said, the Rav looks at me. He had an impish, almost childish quality. And he said, Beryl, the ganze Sach, the entire thing, is not even worth a single line of a Tosfos. He said, it was then that I realized that this man is not the lonely man of faith, he's not a philosopher, he's Rav Chaim. He's Rav Chaim. Meaning, there's excellence, and there's achieving, and there's gaining knowledge, and there's expertise, and there's... But when it all comes down to it, when it boils down to like what we truly value, what really matters, what we're really looking for in life, when you cut us open, what comes out of our, what's flowing through our veins, what do we live for? There's no doubt. There's no doubt. There never was a doubt. The particular zechus of Yosef seems to be the zechus of a person who encounters every trapping of the outside world, and he ultimately remembers who he really is. He isn't an important person in Potiphar's house. He's not a runaway slave boy. He's not a viceroy of Egypt. He's Yaakov. He sees Yaakov in the mirror. Right? That's how some of the Achronim understand. What do you mean you see Yaakov in the chalom? Why a window? It was a mirror. It was a mirror. He was able to see the image of Yaakov. The Medrash tells us that before the Chet, Adam Rishon was covered in fingernails. Prior to the internal Yetzer Hara, the fingernail represented that which protects us from the Yetzer Hara, which was external to us. It was like the shell around our bodies, that which allows us total control. So says the Gemara, Yosef digs his fingernails into the ground. It's a term Chazal used. We know that term. We're learning Nida this year. Chazal used that term when they describe someone who's in the middle of Tashmish and discovers that his wife is a Nida, and he has to stop right there in the middle. He has to control himself and hold back the strongest physical desire known to man, not Tziparnov Bekarka, the Gemara says, to overcome a physical desire, because he knows who he is and that he can be a tzaddik. And the message his father gives him is not, how could you do such a terrible thing? The message his father gave him is, remember, you belong in the Ephod. Remember who you are. You belong with your brothers on the Ephod. That's who you are. You're not this. You're Ben to Yaakov Avinu. And that explains why the particular zechus of Yosef was necessary for Kriyas Yamsuf. Because right before the Kriyas Yamsuf, the Jewish people felt a sense of desperation and they chose not to daven as one should, Be'ez Tzara, but instead to complain that they prefer to be a Mitzrayim. Mazos a sisalon lotzianu mimitzrayim. Haloze adavar shadibarnu elachu mimitzrayim lemor chadal mimenu v'navdas mitzrayim. We're ready to give up on the dream of going back to Eretz Yisrael, going back to where we belong, that we preferred being in Mitzrayim. And at that time, the zuchus and the inspiration of Yosef, a person who had every reason to love and enjoy Mitzrayim, but his dying wish was to be taken out of Mitzrayim. That's when that zuchus was most needed. He doesn't belong on a throne in Egypt. He belongs on, as a name on a stone in the ephod. You know, every visit to Eretz Yisrael is like a healthy reminder of what a Jew is and where a Jew belongs. You know, even if we can't or won't be there physically, we always have to remind ourselves that Am Yisrael is so much bigger than the things that we get caught up in, than all the narishkeit, all the silliness that we get caught up in. You know, my friend Rabbi Isaac Rice called me a couple of weeks ago, and he said it bothers him that so many good, frum people, really good people, really frum people, people who never miss a minyan, people who learn every day, spend 4 full hours on Super Bowl Sunday just like immersing themselves in like such a, let's be honest, a Prusta American culture event that has nothing to do with meaning. He didn't say it like this. Those are my words. And he said, why don't we just offer an alternative of what to do during those 4 hours? So he said, maybe we could just like offer shiurim or something. And we'll market it. 4 hours of shiurim. So, okay, ultimately, back and forth. Who should give the shiurim, this, that? Okay, you know, program. One day you'll discover how many emails it takes to get, like, you know, a simple idea off the ground. Ben knows, yeah. All right, so we ended up with 3 hours, 4 shiurim in 3 hours, and then the last hour, you know, a communal finishing Maseches Megillah. Everyone takes an omelet or whatever, or a daf, and finishing Maseches Megillah together, right? Because the Super Bowl can't, God forbid, be 3 hours, because that would cost millions and millions of advertising dollars. So it's a four-hour program. So it's Rabbi Rice is speaking, and I'm speaking, and Rabbi Yossi Zakatinsky is speaking, and Rabbi Eitan Feiner is speaking. That's our lineup. Pretty good lineup, I think, right? So so we approach one of the shuls to host the program, and the shul says, if you take the name game, Super Bowl, or anything referring to the Super Bowl off of the flyer, we'll do it. But if you keep that it has anything to do with that it's being timed at the same time as Super Bowl, we cannot host it. And not from Balabas, from the Rav of the shul, who I love and is a dear friend of mine. I said, what? And he said, yeah, because then it's going to make people feel bad. They get together, they enjoy, they watch the game, and it's going to make people feel insulted that, like, you know, as if they're doing the wrong thing by spending 4 hours watching the Super Bowl. So, like, you know, just say that you're having shiurim. So we're like, you know what, we'll do it somewhere else. And we put it out there, you know, today, and the feedback that we're getting from good, from people, it says, Anuratzim Vehem Ratzim. How could you say that? How could you say Anuratzim Vehem Ratzim? What's wrong with watching the Super Bowl? Look, everyone has the Yetzer Hara. Everyone has it. I waste plenty of time also. But to convince yourself that you're doing some sort of mitzvah, you know, by spending 4 hours watching the Super Bowl, to convince yourself that our community is at a place where we can't even hear that there's something higher to strive for. Maybe we're not going to do it, but that there's something higher to strive for. That maybe someone who spends 4 hours engaged in Talmud Torah is using his time more wisely than someone who's spending 4 hours watching the Super Bowl and its commercials and everything else. With beer and with everything, because we don't just watch the Super Bowl in like a heimish way. We do it exactly the way American culture does it. We have wings, kosher wings. We have beer, kosher beer. But, you know, sometimes kosher beer, by the way. But, you know, and sometimes kosher wings also. But we completely put ourselves into that experience. The Lubavitcher Rebbe once said that his issue with conservative Judaism was not that there was a lack of full shmiras and mitzvos. His issue was that they made a shita out of a lack of full shmiras and mitzvos. that they have Yetzer Hara, that people have Yetzer, that's one thing. But we, as future leaders of the community, have to realize that we got to set the bar a little higher. We have to at least call our Yetzer Hara as a Yetzer Hara. Someone asked me recently, I told you guys, someone asked me recently, why do you think it's a good thing to have a Twitter account? I said, who said it's a good thing to have a Twitter account? They're like, yeah, but I'm like, yeah, it's my Yetzer Hara. I speak Lashon Hara sometimes. Don't ask me why I think it's a good thing to speak Lashon Hara. At least I know my Averis are Averis and my Mitzvahs are Mitzvahs, you know? So, okay, so tell me. When a Rebbe sits and watches the Super Bowl for 4 hours, you don't lose a little respect for him? Okay, so you'll say, no, he's sitting with his Talmidim, and it's his chance to connect with his Talmidim, and that's what he's really doing for. It's not about the game. Imagine like the YU Rosh Yeshiva just had exclusive Super Bowl party just for the YU Rosh Yeshiva. Right? Rabbi Twersky, and Rav Schechter, and Rav Willi, and a younger generation also, with the gear, with the uniforms, right? I mean, imagine, Rabbi Hirsch wearing his Bears uniform, right? Rabbi Weider with like a Patriots mask or something. Imagine all the Rosh Yeshiva got together and watch the Super. Like, you wouldn't lose a little respect? You would say, it's so good because like that's what you're supposed to do. I'm so glad they're not learning Torah. It's Ayum Venora. That's where we are. I don't know. I was just like, a little disappointed today. If you can't tell that, it's one thing to have a Yetzer. It's another thing to call the Yetzer Hara Yetzer Tov. And I know no one here thinks that way. But this is part of our job to educate and to inspire a community to. At least know what's a mitzvah and what's an avera, to know what's a proper use of time, what's an improper use of time. And it could be that for some people, watching the Super Bowl is a proper use of time. Maybe they have a bunch of young boys, and that's the best way for a father to connect with his children. I spent many, many hours, Yonah can tell you, I spent many, many hours in many baseball stadiums. Okay, I enjoy it. I enjoy baseball. But I don't enjoy it to the tune of, however many hours I spent. But okay, memories were created, So, okay, there's, depending. But unrotzim vein rotzim is inappropriate. It's mamish what it is. Are you on a throne in Mitzrayim, or are you in Evan on the Ephod? Anyway, we should all be zochet to be in Evan on the Ephod.